Okay, well, I thought it would be good to bring us together, especially the last week. I think it's interesting. George Simmons and Stephen Downes have also used the model that we're about to talk about, and that's particularly using a wiki to prepare a course schedule. And in the case of David Damu and Bronwyn and myself, putting content thereabouts amongst the schedule. Personally, and I think I can speak for Bronwyn too, we've found it to be an excellent model. And as far as I'm aware, I think David Wiley was the first to come up with this model of using the wiki like a schedule, and then closely followed by Tamu in Wikiversity, and then Bronwyn and myself. So I was hoping we could come together and tell each other our experiences with the model and some of the problems we're having and the solutions we're coming up with. I think the one thing that we three have in common is that we've used a blog to support the course that runs through the wiki primarily, whereas I think Dave Wiley's course did not. Am I right with that?
Yeah, I think that what is good to notice that in a way the structure is quite traditional. It's pretty much the same with how Moodle, for instance, is used as a closed learning management system. So in that sense, there's no, not that much innovation in setting up a schedule and having their assignments for students and so on. I think probably more interesting is this open act, like the point of view of it being openly available for anybody to edit and to build up the program collaboratively. And like Lee, you did edit my original skeleton program and you were adding stuff in there, and so did some other people too, and I think that's a great thing. And in a way, by purpose, we made it so that the beginning, the first 4 or 5 weeks were pretty much fixed by me, but the last part was kept open for people to search and share in there, like their materials and their stuff they have found. So if you look for my course, that there was in the beginning, there was more like a theoretical introduction to the theme, and then the last part was more like a hands-on exercise. And for the hands-on exercise, I took the point of view that there are for sure many good materials which I don't know about, and the participants may find and can use. So the last part is this hands-on, more practical stuff, and I thought that people can post materials and stuff in there. But I wanted to have a certain kind of authority of the first part, even that was open too, but I wanted to have a certain point of view really in the course and tie up the idea of the free and open educational resources to certain theoretical approach as well. So I wanted to keep authorship kind of by posting a lot of stuff to the first part, but then accepting the fact that when it comes to practical building digital media, I don't know everything, and there's a lot of exercises and stuff online which I don't know about. So people may find them and hopefully share them in there.
Tamu, why is it, do you think, that your course on Wikiversity that we're looking at received edits from people outside of your, let's say, the core group of people who are running the course? I know why I edited it, but did you get any feedback of others? Personally, I edited it because I thought the course, and still think the course, will be useful for us here, and I suppose I wanted to prove the model too, that open access and open editing was beneficial. So I jumped in there and did some editing to prove it, which is a little bit contrived, really, isn't it? So can you tell us a little bit about the others who edited it? What were their motivations, if you know?
We've been crapping down the numbers of the edits now, and it's very little what people been editing. But if you look at, well, you have the history page there now, it's very little edits, kind of like from all the stuff, 95% was written by me, probably, or 90% at least. So it was a certain, moderated by me and kept the, and of course I gave the first structure, partly looking for David's structure as well and growing from there. But I think that most of the edits are kind of proofreading or fixing stuff. Hans, who was the other moderator, he was working on the second part quite a lot, but it was more like a paid job for him, so he got to do it. So I think that this editing, like, finally didn't happen that much, that it was mostly made by me, but I think it's, even in that case, it's nice that it's possible in there. So if someone really, really thinks that the approach or point of view I'm taking should be different, they may try to change it to that direction, or they don't agree on something in there. So I think it's important to be open and editable for people, even if they don't edit it that much. I think that's like important and nice in this kind of working practice. And I guess that I did a bit. I think I blog about it, yes, that it's available, and when people were visiting they saw that it's very, very tough. I didn't say a kind of like an invite, how do you say? Like, I didn't invite explicitly people to come and edit. So it was more like because it's a wiki, people may edit. But that's true, but I didn't ask for people to work on it. So maybe there could have been more editing if I would have been giving it, kind of communicating more clearly that I really want people to edit that. How it's been in your courses? Have there been people editing them?
Not really. We haven't really included that sort of in what they need to do, and I think they just feel more secure working through the course schedule. But I was going to ask a question, Timu. Do you think next time you run the course you'd actually build something in to get them to do so that they did have to add resources to the pages? Do you think that would be a possibility for next time?
Can you repeat? Sorry, I didn't follow that. That am I planning to next time do what?
Include an activity in the course where they have to edit the wiki page or add something to it for an assignment, perhaps.
Ah, okay. There was this one assignment which was the feedback. So there's the feedback page now, which was or critique and feedback is the page which was. I think I can I open it over here. Yeah, so it's open now here. So basically I made here a structure which was this five questions, or was there, I'm not sure if I even made all these questions or was some of the participants made one more question in there. But anyway, the idea was that one of the assignments was to answer on these, and this way kind of build together evaluation report of the course. So I think this was kind of the only stuff where students or participants were asked to edit, like contribute to the wiki page. But am I planning to use student-generated models? My idea was from the very beginning that we don't build any learning content into the Wikiversity, that we will use external sources. So kind of the only purpose of having it in the Wikiversity is to have the program in there and kind of metadata related to the course. And then the actual course content, if you look from the program, it's all different kind of websites and materials around the web. And I think that's like my way of thinking it, that the Wikiversity is not a place to publish the content, but to use external resources. And this is the hub where I can pull up things and remix and put them into the program. So I don't have anything against if there will be student-generated models which comes from somewhere online. So for sure, if there is something which is a great material, but when building the course, I don't think that should be like a invitation for people to create something only in case if it doesn't already exist somewhere, which I'm quite surprised if it doesn't. I mean, if we operate in English, that you pretty much find quality content on every topic in the world nowadays. Did this answer your question?
Tamer, I might just jump in there. I sense that Roman might have been a little bit on a different tip there, because we were originally talking about the collaboration effort gone into your wiki, and I suspect that by Roman asking, I could be wrong, but by Roman asking if there are any activities there asking students to collaborate in it, that she might have been thinking that we were talking about the types of people editing it were in fact students in the course. So to my mind, that's still a little bit, we haven't explored the full scope of what the collaborators have offered you, because looking at your history and knowing some of the names in the editors, not many of them were students in the course as far as I know, and most of them are quite experienced in the topic, and you had quite a number more people offering even minor edits compared to us. We didn't get nearly as many collaboration or minor edits from people in our course, and still haven't. And so I'm just wondering, you know, perhaps because your course is called Composing Free and Open Online Education Resources, that naturally attracts quite a number of people who are quite passionate about open education and stuff, and so like me, they want to contribute and help prove the model in some ways. It'd be interesting to look at Dave Wiley's wiki and see if he in fact had outsiders editing the course, because the title of his would probably be slightly less attractive to such people. And his course was also the first one, as far as I know, so it might not have been on the radar. So personally, I've been a little bit disappointed by the numbers of minor edits on our wikis, although I'm not surprised by that. I think if we renamed our courses and probably targeted them more towards the numbers of people who are interested in open education, then we might actually see some more collaborative effort. I also very much agree with your point that we use the wiki to develop a program, and use external sources. I think that's what makes this model quite strong, and I think it's interesting that you related the model to traditional models like such as in Moodle and Blackboard and other management systems, or any other publishing system, mind you. I think it's right that it is very similar to traditional models, and particularly the schedule week by week or whatever, day by day, month by month. There are prescribed readings with suggested readings and activities to do each time. I think there was a slight difference, I could be wrong here, in the way we did our course, or one of our courses, is that we actually scheduled weekly web conference meetings. I think you did too in your course, but we extended the external sources idea by inviting guest lecturers in. So that the idea behind that was that the course facilitators, that was myself and Roman, were actively trying to play a back seat in the course and inviting others in to talk about the topic rather than setting ourselves to talk about the topic. And rather than having just open discussion about it, we actually invited in external experts, so to speak, to talk for 10 to 15 minutes about the topic, and then it was an open mic conversation about that particular presentation and around the topic generally. Relating to that is an idea that I've got about the use of this schedule model, where, and it's come from George Siemens and Stephen Downes' wiki, and theirs is very much a summarized schedule in that they don't put the content in there. They simply put the week-by-week topic headings and not much else after that. And so relating to the question of student-generated content, perhaps their model will play out that they simply set the topic with a careful selection of the title and get conversation and everything, and that the closure of that each week, that the participants nominate which resource they found out on the internet should be listed as a significant resource to that topic in the wiki. And so the wiki starts with almost nothing in it except for weekly topic headings, and then by the end of the course, it's been filled with what the group thinks to be the most significant readings or resources to the course at the time that that course ran. So I think that might be a suggested model for using student-generated content. And in that regard, I think it would even make it even easier for people to compose courses. You simply, you know, as an expert, Tamu, you might simply just list the types of topics you think are important to composing free and open online education resources, and then be very diligent in the communications around that to have people who are participating go out and find resources, and then by the end of the week, each week, decide which ones are going to go in there. But I think that would make for a lot more demanding course to the participants. Which leads me to want to ask about what sort of people did you get participating in your course? I know Dave Wiley's course, I think, had some 90-odd people, which I think is an astounding number. We didn't. We only had the ones that we normally train in our own organization, 10 to 15 people at the most, and I think we had one or two outsiders coming in. There's more detail to that, too. We did have a success story of outsiders coming in, joining in, informally, and then becoming formal enrollments. But Bronwyn, I might switch off now and see if you want to say anything more to that. And okay, we started at 24. I still think that's a markedly smaller number than Dave Wiley's number, and I'm not sure if the point I'm trying to make is that, similar to the outside collaboration in editing the wiki, is I've personally been a little bit disappointed with the number of outsiders actually joining the course as informal or formal participants. Perhaps we could do more in promoting the course in our relevant blogs and discussion forums and things. Tamu, maybe you could tell us about the sort of participation you've had, and then Bronwyn, the participation you've had on your course. Or Bronwyn, you want to correct me on some of the things I've said right now?
Yeah, I think that the participation, we were quite surprised that there were 70 students or participants who registered to the course. And of course, many of them dropped out, which was expected and something which I think is a good thing, because those who, like, because it was a real course, you were supposed to do certain things, I think for whom we gave, let me see, I think it's in the participants page. Those active participants you see are listed there, and those are the people who kind of finished the course. So there were 19 people who finished from the 70, which we gave this pass or complementary work required. I haven't even checked if they have done that later. So from 70 to 19 who finished the course, which is, I think, a good number in this kind of open, self-organized, voluntary, informal learning. What I have found interesting is that we didn't get anybody from the United States. We have some Canadian people, I think two. One of them was doing master's study in master's in some university and agreed already beforehand with the professor that she will get credit out of that. None from Australia or New Zealand. The most active countries suddenly are Sweden and Finland, and then sorry, I got a phone call. So that's interesting too. Was there one from New Zealand? Ah, that's right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's interesting this that why nobody from United States, like that. But it's anyway the internet superpower, and I think people in here should have found it too. Maybe, I don't know. I probably think that there's a language issue. They thought that it, if it's in English and it's given by some Finnish and Estonian, it's not worth of taking. Not seeing that we could have something to say as well, that we would have like expertises on this topic. And then I think that the probably also, this is just guessing, I don't have any evidence on this, but maybe the culture of taking three open studies is more strong in for instance in Scandinavian countries. We have all these you know, adult education things where people take courses just for fun. And that culture is not that strong, I would say, in English-speaking world, where you take a course to get a certificate or get a piece of paper. So I think maybe too close to traditional course structure. It's also possible, but I think, I don't know, I think also the Swedish and the Finnish students were most successful in the course and really happy about it. They say that they learn a lot and it was fun to take part in, and they worked quite hard too. So I don't know. But then about what was another topic I was going to comment what you Lee just said, that what was it? About the participants. Yeah, from 70 to 19 was the dropout rate. I don't remember, but I was having something to comment still what you were saying earlier, but I forgot it now.
Brian, you want to tell us some about your experience too? You've gone it alone with a version of the course. Let me see, evaluating e-learning best practice. I think the the thing, as Tamu points out, that's different in our approach, Bron, is that we're using it to support our formal education training that we do here, where Tamu has set it up, if I understand it correctly, as an informal learning primarily. I think there is a formal course that Tamu teaches around it, but I think primarily it was set up around informal ideas. Yeah. So, Bron, you and I have set our courses up to complement formal training. What's your experience been with the Evaluating eLearning for Best Practice course?
Before I talk about that, Lee, I'll just take a step back because I was thinking one of the reasons why Tamu and Dave probably attracted a lot of people to their courses, apart from the fact that of the name and the people and interest in open education, it's possibly because they were, or Dave anyway, is using his own blog for his teaching and probably promoting it on there. And people, probably a lot of people are subscribed to his blog, I would expect, and probably yours as well, Tamu. So I guess that could be one aspect, because I certainly didn't promote my stuff at the courses on my blog. I don't know if you did, Lee, but that could be another reason. Evaluation of e-learning for best practice. Well, I started off with 14 and it is part of a formal course and there weren't any informal enrolments. And actually I started with 15 and one dropped out the minute she saw that she'd have to do something apart from use Blackboard, which I thought was interesting. I've actually got 14 now and a core of 6 active participants who are going to complete. The other 8, I'll probably lose another 3 or 4 of those, and the rest will probably finish over the year. So, yeah, I mean, I haven't attracted any collaboration from other people editing. The students certainly don't edit either. It's not really required, though I have asked them to put resources on the page if they want to. It's actually working quite well. I've just run a poll to see how they like the whole setup, so I'll have to wait and see what they say about that, but they seem quite happy working through the course schedule. When I ran it in Blackboard, I had a similar sort of course schedule, but they were using the discussion board, and I'm getting a lot more interaction between the participants' blogs in this course, and I really like it a lot better. I think it's great. It's all laid out. It's clear. I really don't know how the group would go if I just said, well, here's what we have to cover, and I'm not going to give you anything to start you off. A couple of them would probably have just gone and found their own stuff because they have been doing that anyway. So I think there has to be, in my mind, in the student-generated model, perhaps not just chuck them in the deep end, but give them a couple of starting points and then help them to find things. But you are going to have a high level of digital information literacy to do that, and I really have my doubts about, you know, our academic staff, whether they'd be able to do that fully. They could do it partially, certainly. So I don't know what you think about that, Lee, in terms of digital information literacy and people generating content.
Well, I've personally been surprised. I suspect that we underestimate the abilities when we consider the motivations. So I think that in previous experiences where we've had people complaining or demanding support with setting up blogs or a wiki and things like that, I think that actually is coming from some motivational problem, because the times that we've actually stood back or stepped way back in terms of supporting it, I've been very much surprised by people actually getting past that and getting in there and working it out. So I think there's a balance going on there, is my comment on how much we might expect people to be able to manage these things. But then, we don't have, I suppose, the luxury of being able to accept numbers and accept high dropouts, do we? Because we're designing these courses to support our formal courses, and we aren't getting many enrolments outside of those who formally enroll anyway. whereas Tomu's had a lot of people enroll from all around the place and so can afford the large numbers of dropouts, so to speak, even though those who dropped out probably gained, you know, a percentage of learning from the course in the time that they were there. So I'm sort of thinking, Bron, I mean, looking at Tomu's completion rates rather than the percentage of people dropping out, his completion rates are comparable, if not better than ours.
Yeah, but I think that the numbers are quite close to the university or college courses all in all, at least in Finland. I think it's common to have 70 people in some large basic studies course and then maybe 20 will finish it. But I think that's pretty common. What I was going to say about the one thing what came into my mind is which relates to the wikis more is that for instance, I really think that this point of view or neutral point of view shouldn't be the case in teaching with the wikis. I really want to make my point of view, which is not neutral at all, and I think that's a kind of one thing to think about too, that I don't even try to fake that I would have a certain neutral point of view. I want to present my point of view on the topic, and then I expect that people who find my point of view interesting, they will take the course, and who don't want to hear about my point of view, then they don't take the course. So I think that's something which should be thought about in case of wikis too, and I think it might be a big fight in the Wikimedia community which have this neutral point of view policy, at least in the Wikipedia site. I think that, in a way, actually from those students who got some credit, so those were my own students, I think there were six, I think four finished the course. So from six to four, and what was the reasoning I was making in our university, that why I want to do the course this way, that anybody may join and it will be free and open for people, was that the learning experience for these our students will be better because it's open and free for other people to join as well. So, and I really think that was the case. If compare it, that we would have been using some Moodle or some closed system, which was anyway, we would need to use the web because I was not present in Helsinki at this spring. So I think that really like worked out, that it was better experience because we were using this open and free way of working.
Tomu, that's some interesting points you raised there. I think I'm sympathetic to it, and I think to widen the potential controversy, the perhaps the age of objectivism has passed, and that we are, for better or for worse, getting ourselves into a very subjective point of view on things, but with the benefit of having access to lots and lots of people's points of view. And so from that access, being able to make our own perhaps objective decision on that. So I think I'm quite sympathetic to that idea, but it takes that whole threatening aspect of open access, that a lot of teachers are threatened by open access because their work is open for scrutiny, I suppose. We have some teachers who are threatened by that type of thinking. And then to take it even further, to then not be expected, but then to be not sort of promoting your own point of view as an educational course takes it to another level of scrutiny, doesn't it? In that, well, if I get nobody enrolling in my course, then the feedback's pretty clear that nobody's interested in my point of view. that is kind of threatening. Also, when you've inherited a course with a certain name and title and learning objectives and things like that, as we often are in our traditional learning institutions, we don't really. It's difficult to, you know, it's not difficult, but it's difficult to make a convincing argument, I think, make a convincing stance on your point of view when you've inherited someone else's course and then trying to fit it into yours. It's almost like I need to wipe the slate clean and start again. And that's something that might be, there might be deeper meaning in that, in the reason why teachers do tend to reinvent the wheel, or why shareable learning objects just don't work, because every teacher wants to, in fact, push their point of view and don't want to inherit the teaching resources of somebody else and want to, you know, put their particular flavor on things. And I think it's an interesting suggestion you make to embrace that and to actually go with it, and that wikis in particular or open access makes that more inviting or makes that more acceptable and possible. Why do you think, though, that the Wikimedia Foundation would have problems with that? And that question also relates to a question that's niggling at me about the differences between Wiki Educator and Wikiversity, is that they both have governing bodies behind them, one more explicit and one a little less so. And so why do you think the Wikimedia Foundation or Wikiversity users would have a problem with that point of view that you raise?
I think you made a great point. This probably the reusability of learning objects comes down to the point of view issue. And if you look for David Wiley's course, and it's true that I was using it as a background for building up my own. But if you look at then that my course structure, or starting from the name, that I wanted to emphasize the free and open educational resources when David Wiley tried to make this kind of open education argument. So there is a different point of view. I built much more from the free culture and open source philosophy or tradition, when David Wiley is, as he always been, balancing somewhere between that how it really should be. So there's a different point of view, obviously, these two courses, and I think it's a good thing that there are different point of views. About this neutral point of view, that's of course is one of the key policies in the Wikipedia, which is a bit ridiculous policy in many ways as well, because there's no such a thing as neutral point of view, but it's a good aim that we try to be neutral. So I don't have anything against that, but I think that it may come up with the Wikiversity activities that there is a certain request to follow up the Wikipedia policies in that sense, and I think it might become a problem. So far, nobody been complaining that composing free and open online educational resources is not neutral, and I'm not sure if anybody will do that if we don't raise this issue up too much. But of course, you could say that I in a week four about copyright, I don't even present, except the history of copyright, I don't present any real arguments supporting copyrighted learning materials, which I could have included into the course. I think that would have been nice to have a different point of view in there too. There's, of course, there's the idea, the history of copyright law is as a learning material, but there could have been certain argumentation presented as well, which is claiming that copyrighted learning materials is the only way to get them out for the people, that otherwise they won't be made by anybody. But I didn't include it in there. Maybe I should. But obviously it's not a, even kind of aiming to be neutral in here.
Talking about philosophy, I guess the course that I run, Evaluation of E-Learning for Best Practice, is pretty much along the lines of my philosophy around evaluating interactive learning systems. And that came from a course I did in the University of Wollongong. I've since found that they're actually pretty conservative in their approaches. So with the different groups of students I've had who've gone back to some of the traditional models of evaluation, I've always sort of try and include those as well. And one of the things that I think makes this course work quite well is the fact that it's based on, they have to do a practical project, a real evaluation in their workplace. So they get a bit of background theory, but most of the time in the course they're actually doing a real project. And what I've done in the past is had people working together, which has worked for some and not for others, so this time I decided not to have that approach, but I really want to maybe go that way next time, try and have virtual groups working together more on their projects. The problem with that is that they generally want to do an evaluation of a course or a resource in their own area, and for some, they don't want to compromise and do that. They want to work with someone else on their project, so that's why I think I've gone to the individual. So I think what happens is people bring their own beliefs as well to the course, which is coming through in their blogs, which has been quite an interesting exercise. So I think that's that aspect of having people not necessarily working on a project as a group, but working on projects and sharing what they're doing with each other has worked well and helped others to see other people's beliefs and philosophies around e-learning, all that sort of thing, and open content does come into it because we're on an open platform, and I think just by doing that is modelling some, you know, new ideas for a lot of people as well.
There's another significant difference, I think, too, between the approach Bron and I have taken to David and Tamu's, in that we have set a particular start point and end point, but we encourage people to start and end at any time and support that. So all of the start and end dates do is to say that that's the time in which there'll be intensive support available from Bronwyn and myself. But if you fall behind or if you want to start late, then that support is there, it's just less intensive. So in other words, the start and end point is the committed time for learning support, but there is sort of casual support outside of those dates. And the thing that that I'm noticing with that is that that's with our particular participants who are, you know, very busy teachers and like Tamu points out, probably don't enroll in courses for the fun of it. They enroll in courses to get a certificate. And in our courses, the teachers sort of become a little bit too busy and they can't keep up with the course and they fall behind. And if we were to hold to that end point and due dates and things like that, that would give them just enough pressure to pull out of the course probably. But we say that, no, it's all right, you're behind, but that's okay. Keep posting to your blog your weekly sessions, because it gives everybody else an opportunity to review that week that they've passed. And we'll keep coming in and giving you comments. But after the end date, We'll keep commenting on your blog, but we won't be doing a roundup about your work on the course blog, which is pretty much the only difference. And then the other difference, too, is that we have informal and formal, and I know Tamu does too. And the differences between informal and formal to us is that the informal participants just engage with the topics and conversations, and the formal ones pay for assessment and recognition. So pay for assessment services, and then they get a certificate for their engagement in the course, and that's what they pay for. So I don't know if Tamu has a formal enrollment and certificate going on in his course with fee paying and things like that.
I think that the certificate issue is interesting all in all, but I think that I'm not sure that I write it down there any place, but I have promised to write people letters of recommendation on this topic if they need one. So in a way, I'm on my own name. I can put it to the university letterhead if they want. Just a letter of recommendation, which is written by me personally as a certain recognized expert maybe on these topics, and that's it. And I didn't announce this in the beginning, but now I've been telling for people that if you need, send me email. I could have made that in the beginning too, that all those who will pass the course, I'm willing to write this kind of letter. And I think it's fair, because on those people who really did their work on the course, I can honestly write that kind of letter of recommendation. Kind of, yeah, that's true. There's a certain model of meritocracy, which is of course works in wikis a lot too, that you gain the position by being active. When it comes to the course design itself and a bit what we were talking about the collaboration, the way of using the blogs was not like it was a kind of compromise for me, and just relying on the fact that what kind of experiences people have or what they have heard about online courses if they haven't took one. So I was just kind of riding with the mental models people have, and didn't introduce anything new in that sense. If I would do this in a exactly the way I would like to do, I definitely would ask people to build some things together. So moving from the individual reading and doing the assignment and then commenting other assignments, something which is like a knowledge building on certain topics or doing a little research practice in a small teams or even as a whole big team together. And probably that would take place in a closed environment. And you really know this discussion already. So basically, I think that there is time and space for communities to speak in private, because it's better often, and you don't want to share everything outside your group. Yeah, exactly. This is the discussion. We did certain grouping in here too, that I think we were putting quite a lot of pressure in the beginning of people introducing themselves and asking them to use video and tell why do they take this course and who they are and so on. It didn't work very well. But somehow it anyway it helped that you get to know people a bit. It didn't work very well because there were 70 blocks to check. I at least couldn't keep track who is who exactly with pictures and what did they tell about themselves. Nice thing was that Hans made a database out of them. In the database there was a picture of everybody and the name and then notes we were writing that if they've been doing their assignment and what kind of people they are and so on. So we were sharing with Hans this kind of private discussion of the students and their performance, which is also kind of good thing. Students, the participants got more confident definitely in a while when they kind of learned from each other. Most of them been never writing a blog before, so it was the first blog, and many of them don't write the blog anymore, so they made it only for the course, and now it's there, but they don't blog anymore. How many hours did we put in each week? I think our original plan was, let me see if we get to the, what do we say? I think we were saying that it's 4 hours per week, what we expect people to, I think it was there. Was it in the class meeting or assignments? I think it was a 4 hours, 4 to 6 hours study work per week, and that facilitators 4 hours each. I think the facilitators, how much did we work? For sure more than 4 or 6 hours per week. I would say it was not very balanced, like every week for 4 to 6 hours, but I would say in average maybe one day, so let's say 8 hours. And some weeks I didn't do anything, I was traveling, so Hans took care of it. But then also in some weekend I then spent another day on going through the students' blogs. So I would say 8 hours for both facilitators in average per week. Yeah. So full day every week for both of us. And it was not, equally distributed in every week, every 10 weeks. There was certain weeks when we didn't do anything and certain weeks when we did more. We did, yes. We were both commenting the students' blogs. Many of them were very short, like "you are doing very well," more like a social comment than anything on the topic itself. And we made few summaries to the facilitator blog as well, with links into the students' blogs. So we did both. We went and were commenting the blogs of the students, and then we're summarizing in the facilitator's blog what the students were writing about.
One of the things, Timo, that our students were saying, was they couldn't keep up with all the blog posting that was going on, and they really found the summaries that we were doing each week, and Lee and I were sharing that load as well. The participants found our summaries really helpful for directing them into the important things to look at, especially when they were feeling a bit overloaded, trying to fit the course into their usual work and everything. So yeah, I think it's quite an important part of the facilitation.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the blogs, again, we go back to the networks and the group discussion. Blogs are extremely bad collaboration tools. They are not designed for collaboration, and they don't work for collaboration very well. If I would like to facilitate knowledge building or even like a discussion, I would use some other tool, probably a simple web-based forum for that. So I think it's just the blog technology is such that it was quite difficult for the students to follow up, even that we were having many different kind of RSS aggregators in here and there, and we worked hard to make it really easy for people to follow all the blogs and read them, but it doesn't work really like that. And then the like a real discussion doesn't take place very well on blogs. So I think that's one problem of this model.
Yeah, I agree, Teemu. I sometimes wonder if it's because we're not pushing also with blogs, pushing the use of an RSS newsreader, because I know the ones that do use an RSS newsreader in our course are actually effectively commenting and communicating across blogs. But unless, you know, a critical mass of people aren't using a newsreader and keeping up with each other's stuff, then yeah, I agree, the conversation is stifled. In some courses, we've used an email forum to back the course up, but I think that has become at times dominant over the course, where others would just rather keep with the with what they're doing week by week and keep their workload to a minimum. The discussion can become demanding when you get debates and arguments and things like that going on. So I think that there's again another balance going on, that the sort of separation that a blog can happen can offer somebody, it meets the needs of people who want to keep a distance from the group sort of thing, and then things like an email forum are an optional thing for people who like to get in amongst the group and discuss and debate and argue and things like that, and then an RSS newsreader is that in between point too. And certainly I think if we are using blogs, that we certainly encourage the use of a newsreader as well, and that would be that would cover all of that aspect. I was just trying to remember something else that I was going to say about this. I'm glad that we're talking about the blog aspect of it. The hours that Broman and I put into the courses, well, I try to keep mine at 5 hours a week if I'm facilitating a course. And that's only the weeks that I'm working on it. So Broman and I share, I go 1 week and then Broman does the next week. And what's involved in that is that in that week, we go back through all of the participants' blogs, leave comments and everything like that. And then we put a rather detailed summary on the course blog. And that can take, quite a lot of time, actually. If we have about 10 people in the course, that translates into about 3 hours work going through the blogs and summarizing it. So it wouldn't scale, especially if our course did become one where we attracted, like yours, 70 people to begin with, but then dropped down to 19. We'd have to probably design the schedule to allow for that, so that facilitators weren't having to go through and summarize 70 blogs to begin with, that somehow it was self-directed to begin with, or group work, like you say, Bron. And then the facilitators come in more intensely towards the end of the course. I think that would be a way to manage workloads, where the numbers of people joining the course initially are much higher. And I also wonder, you know, Bron, with the detailed summaries that we're doing each week, I wonder, you know, if we did successfully encourage the use of an RSS newsreader, then that would, in a way, make the weekly summaries redundant, especially when you consider how many people are at different points in the week. It makes the weekly summary somewhat disjointed, although it does serve a purpose of bringing it all together. But I'm just kind of worried about how much time it actually takes to summarize the week's work from all the participants, and how that wouldn't scale to a larger number of people. And so I'm wondering, could we forgo the weekly summaries, put more emphasis on the use of an RSS newsreader, and more emphasis on leaving comments on people's blogs, rather than summarizing everyone at the end of the week? And that way I think that could scale, because like Teemu said, some weeks you just leave, you're doing great as a comment, and that's it. And then other weeks you leave a more detailed comment to people who have brought up interesting points.
I'm a bit worried about that, because I think the facilitator presence is really important. Maybe one model is, I agree with the RSS feed, and I like the way Teemu's actually linked people to the list on blog lines. I think that's a goer for me. The other thing, I think if you get people working groups right from the start, they can choose whether they keep a wiki page or a group blog or whatever. And they part of it is they have to actually talk to each other, but then they have to put a summary on the group blog. Our role as participators might, facilitators might be to, well, basically get in amongst the groups and keep an eye on them and, you know, just do something in the way of a course blog. I think we need to have something that is a pivotal part of it that they all know they can look at. So whether it's a wiki page or a course blog or whatever, I'm not sure. But we definitely somehow need to have a presence there.
I think that's a great idea. You say that getting students in smaller groups to do summaries and post them to the wiki or building them in a wiki. But I think it should be again an assignment, what you need to do in a certain time span, and then it's ready in there. Like that, it's not a wiki page which we then edit forever in there. There should be the assignment when it must be ready, and then. But it's a really good idea, because when you have this as a group, you need this boundary object. You need something to grab on with your mates, and a wiki page can be the thing, which then also keeps a nicely track who'll be working on it. So for the facilitator, it's easy to check that who've been active in there and who not. I think this having a smaller groups came up in the feedback page as well, which is in our course wiki, that many of the participants were hoping that there could be even more like a social working together on way or another. So definitely summaries out of the discussions are raisable documents which are summarizing the stuff is a great idea. Students can do that. What it comes, I think, bit of relates to this approach and the roles. That if you look that I talk all the time about participants in the web page, and once in a while I by mistake talk about students in here too. But I think that's important what word we are using in there. Because when we talk about participants, and originally I was putting us as a facilitators into the list of participants as well, and our plan was that I and Hans will also do the course, so post to our blog all the assignments which are in there. But already in the first week we realized that it's too much work, so we didn't, there's too much work for us to take our own course, so we didn't do that. And in that case we took a bit of distance to the other participants and take the role of being more of teacher in there. But I think that's important that to have this kind of idea that you are responsible, or the participants are responsible of their own learning, and you are adults and take the responsibility, and if you don't, then you don't. That's your choice, and we are not like holding hand on everybody in there. There were few people were kind of mad for us that we didn't give support for them to set up the blogs, or we didn't do that for them. And we just simply say that, well, we have 70 people in here and we are happy to help you, but we can't do it for you. So if you are not able to set up the blog for yourself, then you can't take this course. We are sorry, we can't do it for you. So I think this like a in the beginning already communicating this very clear that the participants or the students are responsible of their own learning and working in the courses is really important. It's, I think, when you've been going to schools in any Western country, you get this feeling that the teacher is actually responsible of the learning of the students, and you just go and sit in there and fake to be active in the classroom and everything will be fine.
Yeah, Yes, I think that's an interesting final comment there too, Temo. I think we've been going a little over an hour now, so we better round up. It's been very, very informative to me and given me quite a few ideas on how we can fine-tune the model our end. Temo, thanks for popping in. I hope Dave can listen to the recording and perhaps offer comments through his blog or in other ways. What do you do? From what I understand, you're actually creating a Finnish version of this course you've set up on Wikiversity, right? And that you're running that version primarily, and that this English version sits there for someone else to pick up or something like that. I mean, what is the next steps for you in your course?
I think there was already there were some people who are planning to make a new version out of this. So if I, does this work now? Yeah. New cycle to beginning. So there is a people grouping already. Few people being present their interest to participate and take another cycle. Can you see it now? No? Let me try. Yeah. So this came up now, just some of the Wikiversity people set up a new page, which is gathering people interested in to make another cycle of 10 weeks. And I think I'm not going to teach or be facilitator or participant in the second cycle at all myself. So I think that I'm done with this pretty much, and of course interested in to see what it will be afterwards. If people will pick it up and do something different or interesting with that, and that's fine. There was also, so I'm not either. I'm not doing the same or giving the same course in Finnish. Or that's my plan. I don't know. I think I'm not going to do it. I don't have any plans to do it. But there are some other people who are interested in to translate and do it in Finnish, because teachers want to use Finnish, and then also in Estonia and Sweden, there are people who probably will do the same course in their own countries, in their own languages. And there was a bit of discussion that if these four courses in English, Finnish, Estonian and Swedish could take place same time, same 10 weeks, so in certain points people could also share things in a common language, which will be of course English. And that I think is quite exciting idea, that you can still work on your own language, but then you can collaborate internationally with other people as much as you can. So that is, I think, is the plan with the course. So I'm kind of done and will then just follow up and see if it will take off more than not. It doesn't look very promising, this new cycle. It's nice that they've been setting it up, but well, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people now who will be present their interest. Maybe we should do a bit of marketing in the Wikiversity community on this too, and maybe there would be then more people interested in.
Yes, I mean, that's back to our original point too about how we actually market these courses. I think there will be a lot of people out there who would like to join such a thing, given its informal nature and its free and openness. Temu, I have to ask, because Brahman and myself, our commitment to our courses is, and the pay that we get for working on them, is pegged to how many participants formally enroll. In other words, how many people pay to join the course or get the assessment and certification. How do you, at your end, if you don't mind me asking, sustain your efforts in here? Is this part of a research project, or is it part of your academic self-directedness? Is there some sort of funding behind it, or do you just do it in your free time?
I was fully paid, so no, and I think I saved somewhere, and also Hans, the guy who was assisting me. We were fully paid by the university, so it was a similar way as we are paid on doing our job. So because there were students from our university taking the course, so that they came with the money, which was then given for us, basically. The students come with their money, even though the studies are for students free, but they all carry a package of money with them, which the university made them use, whatever way. And I was paid on that, and so was Hans. So it was just a course we were giving for our own students, and making it open for other people to participate as well. So that was the model. I've been thinking, and I would like to see that there could be also a way of people paying voluntary if they find it something really useful. And so if you want to tip the facilitator, it could be easy to do. Might be difficult too when writing the letter of recommendation becomes a bit more problematic if you've got a really big tick from someone who didn't do very much, maybe. So probably it's better to keep the money and paying from the participants for the facilitators non-existing thing, recycling the money in some other way.
Well, this end, the composing free and open online educational resources can loosely relate to, can relate to one of the courses we have here called Constructing Courses. I can't remember the full name. And so, because that's a formal course and that it's a teacher's qualification or a tertiary teacher's qualification here, then there is room for somebody like yourself or whoever facilitating that course to be paid by us to facilitate our students through that course, right? So, yeah, I think there is scope for the money exchange going on here, particularly somebody like yourself who's experienced and proven themselves in this course. I'm not saying we are going to, but there's scope there, isn't there, for paying somebody like yourself to come back in and facilitate another group, that we would deliver the group and the money same way that your university did. But we better finish up because I don't want to chew up all of your time there. And Bron, do you want to say something last to finish us off with?
Thanks, Lee. It was great talking to you again, Timo. And yeah, I think it's really interesting that you've put all that work into that course and now you're going to give it away to someone else. I tend to sort of feel when I do that amount of work for something that I have a bit of ownership of it, and I guess that's one of my weaknesses, is not being able to let go of things sometimes. Would you be terribly disappointed if somebody doesn't pick it up and run with it, or you just move on to the next project? How do you feel about it?
I think I would be disappointed if it doesn't take its own life. It would be it would be a pity, because I've been investing quite a lot of time into it, and it would be nice if other people will start to use it. There was I think that would be great. That would make me definitely happy if you adapt it to something and. Now, of course, it's a David Wiley's course, which I've been with what Lee's been always saying, that it's from there. And I think that I was using the David Wiley's model as an inspiration, and and then building on something a bit different and I think a bit better too, that I was improving what was the course of David's course, a step better, and taking this different point of view. And I think that's a nice thing. There was one of the participants from Sweden been working with the Swedish international aid, SIDA, and she was saying in a video conference that she might try to provide it for the NGOs working in the developing countries and in Sweden, sponsored by the SIDA, to take the course. So she was already planning to make it as a job for herself, to provide this course for another target group, modifying it a bit to that direction and then providing it as her own consulting business and I think that's a great idea if she will succeed with that.
And I suppose there's no telling how many individuals out there are just using the course as a roadmap for their own particular learning. They might be just looking through it for links or looking through it for ideas and insights. And then there's always a potential, so long as it sits there, that a group can just informally get together, all of which have no idea about composing open education resources, but they use this as a roadmap as a group to go through the course. That would be a wonderful thing to see. So, Temu and Bron, I think we better stop because it's a massive recording, and I'd like to save something for us to talk about next time when we come together again to talk about where we've taken this model or not. I'm coining the name the Wiley Wiki model in recognition of Dave Wiley's initial effort. And would you like me to send the recording of the audio through to you for a review before I publish it? Because I do think there is stuff here worth publishing. So I could either just make the recording and chuck it up or email it through to you for you to edit out bits you wouldn't want to have. Thanks, Tammy. Thanks, no need to edit. Okay, there was a very big sound artifact that came through early on, Tammy, something with your microphone, so I'll obviously take out those little bits there, but I don't think anything was said there that would be controversial to anyone or thing. And I think Dave and his colleagues would appreciate the opportunity to listen in, as would George Siemens and Stephen Downs. Good luck to them on their next iteration of the Wiley Wiki model. Do I have a link to them, to their wiki? I do. I'm just trying to think of the quickest path to it. George Siemens' blog, probably. I'll just switch off my mic and I'll have a little search for it and I'll bring it in here.